Hello out there and welcome to the latest episode of Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is a man who brings the noise and the funk wherever he goes.
Mike DiCrescia.
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for yet another episode of the Film Bookcast.
Yes, we're getting this one out quick.
I know. I'm
excited.
Unheard of for us.
Yes, we waited like a month between the last two episodes, and now we got this one out in like a week.
In 1 week.
So we're improving as podcasters, I think.
Yeah,
that
one
means.
Day we'll like be professionals, but like... Probably not, but maybe.
Exactly. Anyway, if any of you have not listened to Film Bookcast before, essentially what we do, we go through the week's film news first. We're actually going – last week we changed our schedule a little bit. We used to do film news, then the review, then our discussions of various films and TV shows we've been watching. We are now changing it to what we had last week officially, which is film news, then our discussions. And then after that, we'll move on into our feature review. This week, we're going to be reviewing While We're Young, the newest film by director Noah Baumbach. And I'm eager to talk about it. So let's move right along, shall
let's
we?
Let's get into some film news.
All right. We have two major pieces of film news.
Major.
First of which, Michelle McLaren, who was directing Wonder Woman, is no longer directing Wonder Woman.
Not anymore? It's done?
She is out. She has left the project due to creative differences. And literally 2 days later, Patty Jenkins, who was the director of Monster and was originally going to be the director of Thor: The Dark World before stepping out on that movie for creative differences,
plot thickens,
is now going to be directing Wonder Woman. So I think, Mike, what's your take on this?
So this is the Wonder Woman movie, right? They're not. I don't know what.
No, this is the Wonder Woman Lego TV show.
Well, I can't keep up anymore. I don't know what's going to be a TV show, what's going to be a Netflix show, and what's going to be a movie.
It is the Wonder Woman movie that's going to be part of the DC cinematic universe,
right,
so to speak.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm glad it's still happening. I want there to be a Wonder Woman movie. I think that character and women in general deserve that type of that movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Wonder Woman is probably one of the most well-recognized superheroes of all time.
Yeah.
And yet the only... This is actually true. The only cinematic version of her is the Lego Wonder Woman from the Lego movie.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I hate everything. well, so then I really hope this happens. I mean, I don't feel like there was...
You don't have to hope it's happens. It is happening. is happening.
That's true. Well, what I heard originally was when the first director... What was her name?
Michelle McLaren.
Michelle McLaren, there we go. When she stepped down, everyone was like, that's it, Wonder Woman's dead. And then literally took 2 days before they got someone else.
Yes,
so.
It seemed like there was a danger of it being delayed or whatever, but they got... it seems like Patty Jenkins might have been waiting in the wings. Like, they might have had her, like, on call.
Yeah, like, hey, just so you know.
But it's disappointing, because Michelle McLaren is a great TV director and was going to make her feature-length debut in Wonder Woman.
Now she's going to do Thor 3.
That would be the dream. Really, like, probably she's going to move on. Like, not probably, but, like, the fanboy dream is that she just moves over to Marvel and does Captain Marvel.
Oh, my God. Yes, I want that.
Yeah, that would be, like, a weird consolation
for us.
And Patty Jenkins was supposed to do Thor, and now she's doing Wonder Woman. It's all, like, topsy-turvy. But Michelle McLaren is one of the main directors of a little TV show called Breaking Bad.
You might have heard of it.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that has... Like, it's so... TV directing is so weird.
Is it, Mike?
It is. I'm going to explain why.
Tell me why.
Okay, so TV has always been considered like a writer's medium, whereas film has been more of a director's. And what I mean by that is that generally the writer or the creator of the show is generally in charge of the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the visual style of the show has to be consistent week to week.
Right.
Michelle McLaren's visual style seeps through, though, in her shows. And I think they make those shows actively better.
Okay.
And I think Breaking Bad was a show that allowed for a lot of visual experimentation from all of its directors.
Definitely.
But it was always really exciting to see a Michelle McLaren episode because it was always like you knew you were going to get something really cool,
right,
some different stuff. She's also directed episodes of Game of Thrones, which has changed up that show's visual style in its own ways, and a couple of episodes of The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Most recently, she did an episode of Better Call Saul, the second one, which was very good.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But she was obviously going to take a lot of time off to do this Wonder Woman movie.
Right.
And now she's left over creative differences. Apparently, like, they have not said what the issues were.
What happened.
But apparently one of the things that and drove her away. This is probably one small thing out of several things.
Yeah.
She and WB were fighting over what time period to set the movie in.
What?
Yeah, I thought that was weird.
That's a weird... I mean, I guess it makes
Well, apparently,
sense.
Like, I think she wanted... I may have this backwards.
Okay.
But I think she wanted to set it during the Crimean War, and WB wanted to set it during World War One.
Okay.
It might be the other way around. I'm not sure.
But
I think that argument is just weird in general, because I figured I just naturally assumed this movie would take place in present day.
Yeah, if Wonder Woman is going to be in Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Wonder Woman's immortal. That's basically.
That's a good point.
She's a DC hero, so they're basically gods.
Yeah, she is. Isn't that like her whole backstory?
Pretty much.
She's somebody's daughter, right?
Yeah.
Ares or something.
Yeah, I'm not so...
up on your Wonder Woman canon.
Yeah, I'm not so totally seeped into the Wonder Woman lore, but
so she's at least a demigod, so it makes sense. I guess she'd be immortal. I forgot about
exactly.
That.
Yeah, but it is like it's a little surprising though.
Yeah,
I think
because
you have Man of Steel, you have Batman vs Superman that's going to be coming out,
yep.
And Suicide Squad presumably takes place around the same time.
Yeah,
it's weird that Wonder Woman's going to be taking place before then.
Right,
it'll be like its own little Captain America: The First Avenger.
Right, but it'll be the third movie. Although Captain America wasn't the first movie either. Never mind.
So, I mean, I think that was interesting. I think McLaren leaving is kind of symbolic of the kind of... I really like the idea of a shared universe
right.
on film, particularly when it's done well, like with Marvel.
I.e. Marvel.
And with nobody else.
Please, no one... Everyone stop. Let Marvel have this.
That's the thing. It's like... the issue with having the shared universe, and this is something I've actually come to issue with some of the Marvel movies, is there's not really much room for a director to kind of bring their own personality to it, to do their own thing.
Maybe what led Edgar Wright to leave Ant-Man.
That's absolutely what led Edgar Wright to leave Ant-Man. That's the thing. A lot of the Marvel movies have been great.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed most of them. And the ones that I enjoyed the most are the ones where the writer and directors have... their own kind of say to it.
Right.
So, like, Joss Whedon brings his own thing to the Avengers. Shane Black brings his own thing to Iron Man 3. Mm-hmm. James Gunn brings his thing to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. Kenneth Branagh Shakespeareizes Thor.
Yeah. Like, I think they do have directors and writers who fit the style that they need.
Right.
But they have to kind of rein them in a little bit to kind of fit the Marvel mold.
Right.
Which is, I think, a little... I think there's more room for experimentation and growth in those movies than Marvel thinks there might be.
Yeah.
And so, with DC stuff, I'm actually kind of interested in it. Because they... I mean, I love Nolan's Batman movies. And that's an example of just letting a director kind of do whatever he wants.
Yeah, you can have this character go with it.
Exactly. And I think Man of Steel with Zack Snyder is probably also that... I'm not a fan of
Man of Steel.
And supposedly Batman vs. Superman will likely go on in that trek. But DC's been hiring talent that suggests they're going to allow for more directorial
right.
vision.
People with a lot like you said, their own visual, like, art. I can't think of the words now. It's visual style, I guess.
Yes.
Way to put it.
For example, like so, Zack Snyder is doing Batman vs Superman.
Yep.
David Ayer, who was the director of Fury and End of Watch, he is going to be directing Suicide Squad. Michelle McLaren was directing Wonder Woman.
Right.
Now is not. Patty Jenkins is stepping in, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But like, also the rumors that James Wan might be directing Aquaman.
Right.
Phil Lord and Chris Miller are working on the story of the Flash, which is awesome.
That's great.
So I think there's...
Oh, my God.
They're courting a lot of really talented, cool people.
Right.
But McLaren leaving suggests that maybe they're kind of trying to imitate Marvel a little bit too much.
Yeah, maybe. Not, they're putting some... Turning the screws a little bit.
A little bit. But and that actually brings me to Patty Jenkins, who directed Monster with Charlize Theron and has not directed a movie since. And not for lack of trying.
Okay.
She just had... It's very difficult for her to get funding to make a movie for some reason.
Weird. Didn't Monster win, like, a bunch of Oscars
stuff? Yeah, I'm pretty sure Charlize Theron won an Oscar for Monster.
Yeah, like...
Since then, she did direct the pilot of The Killing.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure she directed an episode of Arrested Development somewhere along the line.
Who hasn't?
But she was... The first direct, she was the one who was supposed to direct Thor: The Dark World.
Right.
She was like Natalie Portman's choice. Natalie Portman like championed her.
Yeah.
And she was going to be the first female director to work on a superhero movie.
Right.
Which is ignoring the fact that Lexi Alexander directed Punisher: Warzone.
Oh my God.
But
But it's Punisher Warzone.
But it's Punisher Warzone. But like the first of the new wave of superhero movies, I should say.
you directed that direct-to-DVD Punisher sequel? Great. Good job. Although I don't think that was direct-to-DVD.
Nah, that was in theaters, man. but anyway, last...
I'm glad that one got to you. So hypothetically, she was going to be the first female director.
Yeah, she was going to do Thor: The Dark World.
Right.
And so she was like, she was on board, and she was on that for a while, and then just out of nowhere, she left the project because of similar creative differences, so to speak. And Alan Taylor ended up stepping in from Game of Thrones to do Thor. So I think her jumping into Wonder Woman is a weird thing because she left Thor for creative differences.
Right.
And Michelle McLaren just left Wonder Woman for creative differences. So I'm wondering whether Patty Jenkins in Wonder Woman means that she's A, more willing to work with a big studio
supervisor
like this,
or
or that there were really just Michelle McLaren wasn't right for the project. Patty Jenkins just decided to step in to like,
maybe.
She's able to do her own thing. I don't know. We won't know for like 3 years.
Maybe her creative vision was more in line with DC.
Perhaps. But in any case, I think that's a very odd sequence of events. Yeah. And the DC universe as a whole, I think, should be something to watch.
Yeah, we'll see if it either succeeds or goes down in the blaze of glory.
Yeah, I think it's throwing out a lot of ideas and a lot of like there's a lot of potential there, especially if like they get James Wan to do Aquaman.
Yeah,
especially if like Phil Lord and Chris Miller end up directing The Flash. Like those are cool ideas and cool concepts.
Yeah, I wasn't excited for much, and then I saw that first cast picture of Suicide Squad. Did you see that?
I did. Yeah,
they posted the picture from a table read, and I was like, that actually looks like it's going to be really good.
Yeah. Ike Barinholtz is in that movie.
Yeah. Like, okay, whatever. I'm down. So that'll be cool, I hope.
Yeah. So in any case, that's all the Wonder Woman talk. We should probably move on.
Yeah. Let's go on.
Because there was another crazy thing. Okay. Now, before I say anything about this,
okay,
I'm going to preface it with this statement that over the past few months, I've kind of just cooled down on watching trailers,
right,
like going out of my way to see them. I'm not so spoiler phobic that I won't watch a trailer,
right?
But
you're not gonna be clicking any links.
Exactly. It's like, you know, the trailer comes out, and you know, I'll see like, oh, Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation trailer is out, and I'll be like, cool, and it'll be like, I think I realized that I was doing this.
Yeah,
when the Mission Impossible trailer came out, I was like, cool, maybe I'll watch that later. And like 2 weeks later, I realized I hadn't seen it.
You hadn't watched it yet.
And my life hadn't changed at all.
Right. You were unaffected by it.
I was unaffected, and I was still looking forward to Mission Impossible even without seeing the trailer.
Yeah.
You know, so I think over the past few months, I've kind of just been like, well, trailers are cool. If I see them in the theater, that's cool. If I see them on TV or whatever, I don't want to go out of my way to watch trailers because I like to go into movies as fresh as possible.
Right.
And the time and energy that gets spent just like going, watching trailers, analyzing trailers, it's time and energy that I could spend watching a movie, you know?
Yeah. Like, that's a good point.
Instead of like analyzing a piece of marketing.
Yeah.
That said,
however,
I did make one notable exception this week.
And what was that, Mike?
Well, as you may or may not know, Star Wars Celebration was this past week.
I heard.
They had a panel leading up to the release of a new teaser trailer from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
How pleasant.
Yes. It's a pretty small thing, you know.
Yeah, might have heard of it.
Yeah, Star Wars Celebration, only like a couple geeks go.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal.
It's a real small thing.
But what ended up happening... I normally have a class around 1 o'clock, which is when the live stream was starting around here anyway.
Yep.
The live stream of the panel, I should say. That class was canceled.
And I was opened.
I was in my room and I was like, well, I guess God wants me to watch this.
Like, if there's any more clear sign that you should be watching this.
So I ended up watching the Star Wars panel featuring J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy and featuring cast members, both old and new.
Oh.
And the panel itself was fine. Like if I had waited overnight, like some people there did, I'd be furious. Like
however,
not furious. Cause it'd be like, it's cool. It's probably cool when you're there.
It's part of the experience.
Exactly. But they spent so much of the panel just like talking about stuff nobody cared about.
but it was utterly useless basically.
But there was some cool stuff. Like, they had Mark Hamill and, like, the old cast members come out.
Really?
And it's like, that's crazy.
That's awesome.
Somebody actually, like, when they were introducing the old cast members, somebody on Twitter pointed out that it was, like, the opening of Galaxy Quest.
Oh my God. Wow.
Which is not far from the truth.
No, that's pretty accurate.
And they also, they brought out BB-8, who is the new ball droid that was seen in the trailer.
I really hope he's already catapulted into stardom.
He really has. Like, he's become, I follow a Twitter account.
There's already a parody Twitter account.
Yeah, there was when the first teaser came out. So it's been out for months. I think it's like at Ball Droid or something. But I follow that account. It's delightful.
And it's amazing.
Yeah, they brought him out, which is probably the coolest part, because they had R2-D2 out, and it was cool. And they actually, like, had, like, the working model of BB-8 that actually...
Wow.
Like, it's not a CGI creation, it's an actual
real
robot. Yeah, that just rolls around. I don't know how the aerodynamics of that work.
How it works, but it works.
But it's so cool.
That's the coolest thing ever.
But in any case, all of this led up to the teaser trailer, the new teaser trailer,
teaser
of Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're now going to begin a shot frame by frame analysis of the trailer. I hope you're ready for it, listeners. That's what our whole episode is. The whole part about a feature review, that was a lie.
No, we're not going to do an entire episode.
Oh, we're not going to do that. Oh.
We're not going to do an entire episode focused like analyzing a trailer for Star Wars The Force Awakens. We're not the Slash Filmcast.
Oh, just kidding. We love you.
Yeah, we do. We spent an entire episode talking about Slash Filmcast once.
One day we will start the Slash Filmcast review cast.
It'll be glorious.
It'll be wonderful.
But we do want to talk about the trailer a little bit. So, yeah. Mike, why don't you discuss your reaction to the new teaser trailer?
New levels of hype have been achieved. Previously unbeknownst to me, I didn't know I could get that excited about anything.
Yes.
The opening shot of the little speeder thing. And then... big pans across a Star Destroyer.
He's crash landed in the background.
Yeah, just hanging out. Oh my God. That was like, that could have ended. That could have been a 15 second scene. That's it. Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, December.
And you'd be happy.
I would have been done. I would have been like, okay, that was great. I'm glad they made that.
And then there was more.
Yeah, and then other stuff happened.
Yeah. But basically, that was one of the things that stood out to me. One of the things that actually was pointed out to me, there's a voiceover in the trailer, and it sounds... I actually wasn't able to place the voiceover at first until somebody pointed out to me that's actually dialogue from Return of the Jedi.
Yes, yeah. I was reading this the Reddit discussion of this, and somebody said, how did Mark Hamill get his voice to sound so young? And they're like, what the hell? And they're just like, it's the same audio, man.
Well, that's the thing. I thought, like, when I heard that voiceover, like, I was trying to think about it because it was like, that sounds like Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if it is.
What?
So, because, like, and there was, like, I was analyzing it with a couple of my friends, and it's like, I was strong in the Force. My father has it.
Yeah.
I have it. My sister has it. And I was like, my father has it, but your father's dead.
Wait.
What?
Yeah, and then, you have the power, too.
And then I realized, oh, that's Return of the Jedi audio. Yeah. That makes more sense.
It's awesome, though, but it's so good.
Yes, and that shot of Darth Vader's broken helmet.
Oh, that was great. That was wonderful. Yeah, that was wonderful. I think the audio, the dialogue, and then that voiceover with the scene when the, like, a metallic hand gets put on R2-D2.
Yes.
You're like, yes, it's Luke. Yes. That was awesome.
Yes. And then it basically all culminates to the final shot.
To the shit-eating grin of
Harrison
Ford.
Yeah, you just see Han Solo and Chewbacca, and just says, Chewie, we're home. And then Chewbacca growls. It's the end.
Yep.
You're like, whoa!
Then he says, it's the first time Harrison Ford has smiled in 10 years.
Yeah, no, that was amazing. Like, I don't know, just the sight of seeing Han Solo again was like, gave me goosebumps, man.
It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I'm so excited for this movie. It's a new Star Wars movie. Like,
yeah, and it's like legit. It's real. It's Star Wars.
Yeah, this is a real
it's not like
Star
some
Wars
bullshit
movie.
Prequel.
It's, yeah,
this is a real Star Wars movie.
Real Star Wars movie with Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, but a bunch of new cast members who are awesome.
Yeah, like, and are prominently featured in the new trailer. Which
yes, that's
cool.
True. John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, and Daisy Ridley were all at the panel.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else from the new cast was at the panel, but just those three guys. But also in the cast of this movie are Adam Driver, who was in While We're Young. Adam Driver, Domhnall Gleeson, Gwendolyn Christie from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah, it's got a pretty stacked cast.
Yeah, Andy Serkis, Max von Sydow. There was a great there's a great thing on Twitter. I guess Max von Sydow was on Twitter. I didn't know that.
All right.
And somebody, like, he tweeted about the Star Wars trailer, mm-hmm. and somebody tweeted at him saying, it was like, oh, are you a villain in this movie? And if you are, will you be merciless? And then he responded back saying, it's like, maybe, but, you know, more information will be coming soon.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
So, if nothing else, the trailer provided us with that.
So, worth it.
And Max von Sydow making a pun on his Flash Gordon character.
Good for him, man.
But, yeah, so I think with the Star Wars trailer, I feel like I'm done now.
No more. No more on trailers.
Now that I've seen two teaser trailers, I've seen, like...
Yes.
That's the thing. And I know before December, I will almost definitely see it's another impossible. Star Wars. Yeah. It'll be impossible not to watch one.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be in theaters everywhere.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
And TV every commercial break.
But I'm not going out of my way to watch them.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about, like, the, you know, stay... I hate how trailers are sometimes now, like, 2.5 minutes... And they provide the whole, or at least a basic story outline. It's like,
yeah.
I don't want that. I want to be teased. I want to just be given enough that I want to see this movie.
Yes. I want to get, like, just a taste of it and then leave me alone until until the movie comes out.
Yeah.
Like the Spectre teaser.
That's what I was just going to say.
The Spectre teaser was so good.
You were like a giddy school child.
Yes. It was so cool.
When that happened.
Yeah. I've seen the Spectre teaser once.
Yeah.
Because I haven't gone back to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But when we saw Furious 7, that teaser came before the movie. And just this shadowy figure of Christoph Waltz just talking. Like, there's nothing happens in that teaser.
Nothing.
But it's so cool.
Yeah, there's like a couple shots of some stuff. Yeah. And then Christoph Waltz being a menacing German person. That's it. That's all I needed.
Yep.
And I'm in.
And Star Wars so far has been doing a great job of doing that
yes.
in a similar fashion.
Yes.
That's natural because J.J. Abrams is in charge of this and he hates spoilers. Actually, one of the funniest things about the panel was that people, like the moderator, kept asking J.J. Abrams questions.
Yeah.
Like, oh, can you tell us about this? And J.J. Abrams would be like, no.
That's awesome.
No, I can't.
No, I'm not going to do that. That's cool.
But anyway, yeah, that's the Star Wars teaser trailer. Just wanted to talk about that a little bit. It's not so much news as it is marketing, which is why, generally speaking, when trailers come out, I don't really want to talk about them on here because they're not news. They're marketing for movies. But
it's
Star Wars. In this case, I felt like it would be fun to just talk about Star Wars. So.
Yeah. Yes. Good decision.
Yes. In any case, let's move on to our discussions.
These are my discussions. You're
on the mic. There you go. Just when I thought I could talk about movies all day, I talked about more.
God damn it. Perfect.
So, Mike, why don't you talk about your discussion? It's not even a movie. You're breaking the podcast.
I'm a maverick, Mike. So since we've changed it to discussions and kind of opened the floor, I'm going to talk about... there's this new show on Geek and Sundry that's a YouTube channel that's run by Felicia Day and Will Wheaton, kind of like the cousin of Nerdist with Chris Hardwick.
Okay.
They've started a Twitch channel, which Twitch.tv is like a live streaming. It's usually gamers, like people on their PCs and stuff will set up streams and you can watch them, whatever, chat room. It's fun. But now it's kind of become, got bought by Amazon, I think, for like... ungodly number of billions of dollars because that's how things work now.
Yeah.
And it's kind of moving away from gaming, but becoming like a actual channel. So Geek and Sundry started a Twitch channel and they have weekly programming, like I think Monday through Friday, I think. And they're, you know, from 4 p.m. to whatever a.m., they just have shows and it's people playing board games. So they do the normal, you know, people playing video game stuff, but like they have interview shows, they have all this stuff. So the one I want to talk about, though, is called Critical Role.
Okay.
Thursday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. It starts at 7 on the West Coast because they're all cool and stuff with time travel.
Yep.
It's called Critical Role, and it's a Dungeons & Dragons game. So I've transcended to a new level of nerdiness with this one.
apparently.
Yeah.
Let's see.
And it's amazing.
Okay.
It's the whole cast. It's apparently a game that's been going on for 2.5 years. Like, these people have been playing this campaign for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And it's entirely a cast of voice actors. So it's the okay. friggin' coolest because every character has their own unique voice. The Dungeon Master is also a voice actor, so every NPC has their own voice. And he's amazing at describing everything, so it's cool.
Cool.
It's the voice actors, I don't know all their names, but it's all the people basically that do the characters in World of Warcraft and like Hearthstone.
Okay.
I know Ashley Johnson is one of them, who is the voice of Ellie from Last of Us.
Yes.
And a couple, you know, they're all basically video game. Oh, the guy who's currently Thor in the animated Marvel movies and stuff.
Oh, really?
He's in it, yeah.
And he does his Thor voice?
Basically, he plays Grog, the Goliath barbarian. So he has an intelligence of 6, and he's just all about, can I kill stuff now? And that's like his whole thing, but it's hilarious because he does like this, you know, awesome, what you would assume a barbarian voice would sound like. I don't know. It's really cool. So I think people should check it out. And they're on, I think, their 5th or 6th episode was this week. I don't remember. They have them all up. They were on their Twitch channel and their video on demand, but I think they moved them to geekandsundry.com. They have a list of their shows and episodes, so you could watch them there. So twitch.tv/geekandsundry, 10 p.m. Thursday nights. Watch it.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a cool show.
Yeah, it's a fun time.
Yeah.
If you like Dungeons & Dragons.
I mean, I don't play Dungeons & Dragons myself. I did play Pathfinder briefly.
Right.
With a couple of friends, but that kind of didn't pan out. Yeah. I feel like it's a game that you really have to be committed to in order to keep going on with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. They have a huge party. They have 8 people, so or 9, including the Dungeon Master. So it's like impressive that they managed to do it for 2.5 years. I couldn't do it with 4 people. Like we tried. We got like 5 weeks in, and we're like, it's not going to work. So I don't know how they've done it, but whatever. Now they get paid for it. So good for them.
Fair enough. All right, and
what's your discussion, Mike?
For my discussions, I've got 2 things I want to talk about. First one is a movie I watched last night.
Okay.
It's written and directed by one Seth MacFarlane.
MacFarlane.
MacFarlane. and it's called A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Oh.
Yes.
Bold choice.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I was kind of looking forward to this movie when it came out.
Okay.
You know, I don't dislike Seth MacFarlane as a comedic presence.
No, I agree.
That's the thing. As many people who were in junior high during the early 2000s, mm-hmm. I was a big fan of a program called Family Guy.
You may have heard of it.
And I enjoyed Family Guy, and I still have some nostalgic memories of that show, even yeah. though as I've grown up, I've grown to sort of detest that show.
I still think the first 3 seasons are amazing.
Yeah, I think the first 3 seasons and its first couple comeback seasons were pretty good.
Yeah, they were
like,
good.
After that, it goes downhill very fast.
Mm-hmm.
I also really enjoyed American Dad. I actually think that's a really funny show.
Yeah.
Arguably a much better show than Family Guy.
Bold statement.
I would not...
you would stand by that?
I would stand by it, yeah. All right.
Anyway,
a couple years ago, it came out with a directorial debut, Ted.
Smash it.
Smash it. Like, it was huge. That movie was insane.
Yep.
And I enjoyed that the first time I saw it. But I think Ted illustrates my problem with Seth MacFarlane and mm-hmm. stuff in that I enjoy it once.
Right.
And then, like...
Then the shtick gets old.
Yeah, I will sit through whatever he does once, and then afterwards, it's like, if I see it again, it's like, well, all of these jokes are from 2012 and are related to things 2012 that are not relevant anymore.
Right.
Like, Ted ends with a picture of Taylor Lautner. Like, that's...
Oh my God.
The final shot of Ted is a picture of Taylor Lautner's face.
Are you serious? I don't even remember that.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Wow. Yeah.
So, like, Ted, I think it's still good for some laughs here and
yeah.
there. But I was really looking forward to A Million Ways to Die in the West when it came out, because, like I said, I do enjoy his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I love westerns. I love comedies.
Why not both?
Should be a slam dunk.
Right.
Right? Problem with this movie.
Yes.
It's... Like, 1/3 of it knows it's a comedy.
Okay.
And that 1/3 is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The other 2/3, I don't even know what is going on in this, in Seth MacFarlane's mind. There's several scenes in this movie that play it completely straight.
Really?
Yeah. Every scene with Liam Neeson.
Uh-huh. Played
like straight. Liam Neeson's the villain of the movie. And he's, like, completely serious the entire time.
Is he playing Bad Cop from Lego Movie?
Well, Bad Cop was an interesting and fun character. This is...
Wow.
And I think the joke is that Liam Neeson is like the archetypal Western villain, and so he should be playing it completely straight. Problem is, everybody else in the scenes around him is also playing it completely straight, and there's no comedy there. It's just kind of like serious
dark,
scenes.
Dramatic scene, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's the central relationship between Seth MacFarlane and Charlize Theron, mm-hmm. who, like, Charlize Theron's really is pretty funny in the movie. She has some good stuff in there, and Seth MacFarlane and her have good scenes together. But for some reason, the movie thinks we're really invested in their relationship.
Okay.
When we're not.
It's not happening.
It's like a relationship you can see coming from a mile away. It's not like it's trying to do anything new.
Right.
And it just kind of, like, happens. Like, that's, and it, like, plays it completely sincerely. Mm-hmm. When the thing is, most, like, the third of the movie that's pretty good is when it's, like, snarky and, like, when it's focusing on the idiosyncrasies of Western life.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty funny.
Like, I like Seth MacFarlane's, like, snarky character that he plays in everything.
Right.
But, like, there's some funny moments. There's, like, moments like, there's a scene where he bets Neil Patrick Harris $1 to do this gunfight thing.
Yeah.
And everybody in the crowd's watching them, and it's like, $1, $1, I've never seen $1. And then when Neil Patrick Harris takes out $1, everybody in the crowd takes off their hats.
and looks at it.
And, like, that's pretty funny. And, like, if there was more stuff like that, which was, like, you know, kind of just, like, satirizing Western life in Arizona, 1882, when this movie takes place, I think it would be a much better movie. It's also way too long. It's almost 2 hours. Like, it's 115 minutes, I think, was the runtime.
Oh, my God. This needs to be like a 95-minute movie.
If that. Like, it's, like, if you could cut out all the scenes that are being played straight, all the scenes that are, like, really sincere, and just make it, like, this really tight 90-minute snark fest.
Right.
And I'd be so on board.
And you'd be down.
You know, there's, when you think comedy Western, there's one movie that comes to mind, and it's Blazing Saddles, right. And that movie's perfect.
Yeah.
So to try to do a comedy Western, you have to try to do something either different from Blazing Saddles.
Right.
Or, like, try to do something in the vein of Blazing Saddles, like try to recapture that magic or whatever. And I think he was trying to do something different, but I think he was also trying to recapture the magic of Blazing Saddles. And, like, it just kind of, it feels very unfocused is what I'm saying.
Okay.
But that said, there are a couple funny scenes. Like I said, there's that, the dollar scene. There's, like, there are characters in this movie that just kind of show up and then disappear. Like, Giovanni Ribisi and Sarah Silverman have, like, a subplot that gets forgotten about for, like, an hour.
Really? oh, my God. So maybe they just kind of, like, just put a movie out. Whatever, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. And being a Seth MacFarlane movie, there's a couple of, like, pointless asides. Yeah. There's a couple cameos. And the cameos itself, like, there's two cameos I can think of. There's three cameos I can think of. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of fun on individual thing.
Right.
But, like, A, one of them was in every trailer of the movie.
Yeah.
And it would have been awesome to, like, just have that
pop up.
But, you know, the trailer, like, the cameos themselves don't really add anything. And there's, like, they don't, if you don't know the joke, like, if you don't get the reference, you're not going to get the joke.
Not going to make sense.
Which is a problem with a lot of Seth MacFarlane's work.
I was going to say, that's very, I wouldn't say problematic, but, you know, a stamp of Seth MacFarlane is to have some big cameo like Patrick Stewart in, what's it called? American Dad, or Adam West in
Family Guy,
you know. Somebody that should not be in this, like, doesn't belong, but they're totally in, and it's awesome. So, I don't know.
Yeah. But in any case, Million Ways to Die in the West, very disappointing, because, like I said, there's a lot of potential there.
That's
like
why it's no longer called Recommendations. It's now Discussions.
It's now Discussions. There was a lot of potential in Million Ways to Die. Like, I think Comedy Western is a fun idea, and Seth MacFarlane's a funny guy. It just doesn't hit
on
the mark.
On paper, it should have worked.
Yeah, it just doesn't hit the mark as often as it should. But the other thing I want to talk about, the entire series of Daredevil, the new Marvel TV show, just showed up on Netflix a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
And I have watched the first episode so far.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it. End of review.
Excellent. Moving on.
No, I'm eager to see more.
Yeah, I need to watch at least the first 4 episodes, I think, because there's a fight scene that I've heard all about.
I think it's in the second one. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's the second episode?
Apparently there's, like, a 5-minute, like, one shot.
Yeah, single take.
So, yeah, I'm eager to see more. It's a very different tone than what Marvel is usually doing. Generally speaking, they're much more lighthearted, much more fun.
Much more Joss Whedon-y.
Yeah, they got the Joss Whedon thing going on. Daredevil is pretty much the exact opposite. There's
Yes.
Like it's funny and there's like jokes and stuff. It's not like DC, which is grim and dark.
It just growls.
But like it's a much more serious take on one of their heroes.
Right.
It's very much inspired by the Frank Miller run on Daredevil in the comics back in the 80s, who was also like the Frank Miller run of Batman in the comics is what kind of made the definitive cinematic version of Batman.
Right.
It seems to be the case with Daredevil as well.
So is Daredevil, is this going to be part of the universe? Or
yes.
It is?
The first episode, actually, it refers to the Battle of New York from Avengers as the incident.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the first scenes is Matt Murdock and Foggy Nelson renting out a law office, and it was like, oh, it's the building that wasn't destroyed by
the incident. Wow.
So yes, it is part of that whole universe.
That's interesting. I didn't think they would do that with a Netflix show.
No, they did. They did. So
good on you, Marvel.
Yeah, and they're coming out with more shows. They're coming out with AKA Jessica Jones, which is their next one. Mm-hmm. Iron Fist and Luke Cage are coming up after that, and then they're going to be.
Every IP is going to be a fucking movie or a TV show.
Yep. And then after they do all four of those shows, they're going to combine them into one show.
Are you kidding me?
Called The Defenders. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's going to be real. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be crazy.
I mean, that's awesome. But I'm just going to be bored of it by then, though. Like, it won't be interesting anymore, though. Like, whoa, they connected all these characters.
It's a little exhausting.
Yeah.
Well, I think it would be crazy if they brought all these characters into the movie. Avengers Infinity War Part 2.
It's the Defenders.
Just have, like, the Avengers, and you have the Defenders, and you have the Guardians of the Galaxy, and you have the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and you have time-traveling Agent Carter.
Yeah, like, if you've established that they're in the same New York, like, when inevitably New York gets blown up again, they're going to be there.
Yeah.
Like, God damn it.
But in any case, I really enjoyed the first episode of Daredevil. I'm probably going to watch the rest soon. But I think that about wraps up our discussions.
Yes.
So.
Still have a whole other review to do.
Yeah. Let's move on into our review of While We're Young.
I like our life as it is.
Yeah. I mean, if we wanted to take off to Paris tomorrow, we could.
If we're going to do it, we should plan it at least a month in advance.
A month is still in the realm of spontaneity.
Beautiful class.
Oh, thanks.
I really loved your film, Power Elite.
You've seen it.
That scene with the dogs around the garbage. How did you stage that?
Those dogs were just there, and I said, hey, shoot those dogs.
Beautiful.
Why do you suddenly want to hang out with a couple of 25-year-olds?
We were just 25. I mean, we weren't, but, you know.
We're the boring couple with a baby. What have you guys been doing?
We met this interesting couple.
You came!
He's a young documentarian, and she makes ice cream.
How old are they? 25, 26?
26, 27.
They're children.
Yeah, 9 years ago, they couldn't vote.
I love his shoes. I have some wingtips here somewhere. I stopped wearing them when I got shin splints.
What kind of class is this again?
Hip-hop.
And true gangsters don't speak.
Something about being around them that energizes you.
You have arthritis in your knee.
Arthritis?
Yes. I usually just say it once.
So that was from the trailer for While We're Young, the newest film by director Noah Baumbach. It stars Ben Stiller, Naomi Watts, Adam Driver, Amanda Seyfried, Maria DeZia, Charles Grodin, and Adam Horovitz, also known as the King at Rock.
God damn it. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I was not expecting that.
This is very exciting because we... This is very exciting because we currently have Mike D about to review a movie starring Ad-Rock.
Yep, pouring out from a homeboy MCA.
Yes.
Rest in peace.
Anyway, While We're Young is a newest film I know about Baumbach, who is the director of such films as Kicking and Screaming, The Squid and the Whale, Greenberg, and most recently Francis Ha. Francis Ha is a movie I loved. Like, that was a straight up, like, I really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, I managed to not see that somehow.
Well, you should rectify that immediately, sir. It is on Netflix, so anybody who hasn't seen Francis Ha, definitely check that one out. So While We're Young is a story about Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts, who are a couple who've been married for a very long time. Mm-hmm. They're in their mid-40s, and they're kind of in this rut, so to speak. Ben Stiller is a documentary filmmaker. He's been working on the same documentary for 10 years. Naomi Watts is a producer of documentary films, but not his. Yep. And they meet this young couple in a class that Ben Stiller is teaching, played by Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried, and they end up experiencing a kind of reliving their youth, so to speak. And that's essentially the plot of the movie. It's a lot of scenes of Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts just doing things that young people are doing.
And it kind of works. Like, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's a pretty delightful time. I don't think it's as successful as Francis Ha, But I think it's a very good it's a very good examination of
it's a coming of youth story.
Whoa. it's a very good examination of what it means to be old versus what it means to be young.
Right.
And how like our modern how modern generations kind of treat how they age, so to speak. Ultimately, I think the lesson at the end of the movie is that young people are douchebags.
Yeah, I was kind of like put off at the very end, like just for that one. It's like
I don't know. I was kind of vindicated in that.
I mean, yeah, they're douchebags. Like those characters are douchebags, but I don't know. I was just like, that's me, man.
That's us.
Yeah, I don't want to be a douchebag. I don't know. But it was, other than that, it was really I enjoyed it all the way through. Though,
but I think it's really interesting actually that like Frances Ha is a movie about a young person.
Yeah.
And it's about, like, just being a young person in New York.
Okay.
Like, specifically that. Mm-hmm. And While We're Young is about
Did
being...
Did you say that New York is, like, its character in and of itself?
Somebody just watched They Came Together.
Yeah. You could almost say New York is its own character.
Only in New York, right? But, yeah. So, Frances Ha, it's about a young girl living in New York and just being about... being that age and being that person in that time, in that place. And While We're Young is almost the exact opposite. It's about like being an older person. I wouldn't even say that old. So they're in their
mid-40s.
But being an older person in New York and seeing kind of life pass you by, so to speak.
Like you feeling like you missed your chance kind of thing.
Yes. So, I mean, I think, Mike, what is your kind of overall take on While We're Young?
I enjoyed it a lot. I went in, I guess, speaking of, you know, not seeing trailers and stuff. I had seen one commercial and, like, didn't even whoosh, went over. It's like, whatever, it's a movie that's going to exist and I won't even know about it. And then you texted me, like, oh, let's go see this movie. And I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And I looked it up and was like, oh, yeah, that's okay, whatever. And I had no idea what to expect going into this. And I was pleasantly surprised. I had way more fun than I thought I was going to with this kind of movie. I was like, oh, great, it's going to be one of those, like, I mean, I haven't seen This Is 40, but it's the same kind of thing that I've. Would assume it would be like.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually This Is 40 is a pretty good comparison point. I think this is a much better movie than This Is 40.
Okay.
This Is 40 kind of hits a lot of the same beats, but it's not really about them meeting younger people, and that movie also has a lot of pacing problems. This one...
this one was pretty great, although, I mean...
Yeah, it's a pretty solid time. It never outstays its welcome.
Right.
You know, it's always like... it's probably about an hour 45 minutes, I would say.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
So it's about like the perfect running time for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it just works.
Yeah, I laughed way more than I thought I was going to at a movie that's like made for 40-year-olds. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a very... I think Noah Baumbach is very good at kind of like examining like people's lives.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that kind of holds him back a little bit is he kind of... It's sort of autobiographical in its own way in a lot of cases. And I think in this movie specifically, there's a lot of film geek references.
Yes. That... I was going to say, if you gave me some time, I could probably come up with some, like, this is really a meditation on the state of, like, film in culture.
It really is, though. There's a lot of film geek references. And, like, a lot of times that's right up my alley.
Right.
And then other times it's like, all right, like, back up.
Slow down.
Slow down. This isn't about you, Noah. But in a way, it sort of is.
It's just about
you
trying to live forever, man.
But there's some references that, you know, work. Like, there's like a Rosemary's Baby, like, recreation that they do. There's a scene where, like, they just keep talking about the Goonies. For like.
And when did that become a good movie? Which I thought was an amazing line.
Yes.
Thanks, Ad Rock.
And all the cast members do like a good job here. It's fun seeing Ad Rock in the movie.
I forgot that. Like you had told me before, you're like, oh yeah, Ad Rock's in this. I was like, oh crazy, forgot about it. And then right before we started, you were like, that was Ad Rock. I was like, oh shit, yeah, it was. It's awesome. He's great.
Yeah, he's really funny. Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts are the central relationship, and I think their chemistry is strong. They feel believable.
Yeah.
In those roles.
Absolutely.
Ben Stiller, I think, is just making movies like about how sad his life is right now.
I was gonna say
between like this and Walter Mitty.
Yeah,
like...
yeah, that's right. I feel like I've gone to concerts in Manhattan and been like and seen Ben Stiller's character there.
Yeah,
be like the old dude.
Yeah, Ben Stiller was also the star of Greenberg, which is the same thing actually.
Like, yeah,
just being very sad.
Yeah, I don't know, but whatever. He's got it down, so yeah. Keep doing you, I guess.
Yeah, and Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried are like the young couple. Mm-hmm. Adam Driver is essentially playing a more respectable version of his character from Girls.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever watched Girls.
But I've seen episodes here or there.
Okay, I really like Girls. That's a great show, and Adam Driver is honestly like one of my favorite actors, like specifically from that show.
Wow.
Like he's great, and so it's cool to see him in here as like a more respectable version.
Yeah,
I guess like he seems very similar, but he's like recognizably different.
Yeah,
in this role.
That said, hated him.
Yeah, he's such a douchebag.
He's the worst. But and, the scene that bothered me with that, I guess, is the big climactic, you know, confrontation between.
Right. Do you want to do that in spoilers?
Well, I wasn't going to spoil or anything. Spoil anything. All There's right. just a line where Ben Stiller calls him like an entitled brat, and you've been told your whole life you can do anything. And they're like, yeah, like that. We were raised that way. Like, you told us we can do anything. we feel entitled because you raised us that way. Mm-hmm. Why are you mad at us for that? Like, that's your own fault. That's why I don't like this movie. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
That's interesting, actually. That's an interesting point.
That's my whole take on that issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of Ben Stiller's character is that he can't really see anything beyond himself.
Right.
So I think that's actually pretty interesting that he wouldn't even come
Recognize
to that conclusion.
That. Yeah.
Because the thing is, Ben Stiller is about 44 in this movie. Mm-hmm. Adam Driver's supposed to be like 25.
25 or something.
So,
yeah.
Like, I think Ben Stiller's a little too young to be.
Right, he's not the parent.
Yeah. But he's, like, kind of an in-between
yeah.
in that way. So I think that's interesting. But
so
I think
he totally ruined your whole thought process.
But I think the relationship between Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried is really interesting. I think the movie captures young people culture in like Brooklyn specifically.
Yeah, I know a
specifically
lot of people
well.
Like, I know a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
I guess they're also douchebags from an outside perspective.
Yeah, like I don't know. That's the thing. When like early on in the movie, like Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts are hanging out with Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried. And they're feeling energized, and they're being like, wow, these people are so cool and so crazy, and they
yeah.
live life. And I was
their apartment's filled with things we've thrown out before, but it looks cool there.
Yeah. And I was, like, watching those scenes and thinking, like, man, if I knew these characters in real life, Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried, I would hate them. Like, they'd be the worst people.
Yeah, I guess. I got nervous for a minute, like, in the first, you know, 25 minutes or so. I was like, no, this is just going to be a movie, like, look at how shitty hipsters are. But it turns out to be a lot more, they're about
There's
a lot more than that. Which
more
was,
nuanced than that.
Yeah, which was.
It definitely satirizes hipster culture.
Yeah. There's the montage we talked about where, you know, well, there's a scene where they're trying to look, they can't remember what something is. So Ben Stiller's like, oh, we'll just look it up. And he pulls out his phone.
Yeah.
And.
And then Adam Driver and Amanda Seyfried are
like,
no,
let's try and remember.
Yeah, and then they just don't remember. It's, like,
it's just like a scene.
Let's just not know.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, you know, I know some people that, like, you know, of our generation, of our age, you know, early to mid-20s that have, like, rejected the technology that we have.
Yeah.
Like, his move towards vinyl.
Yes.
Adam Driver's, like, a whole thing of vinyl,
yeah.
But, you know.
He also uses VHS.
Yeah.
Which is such a worse technology.
Oh my god, it's like cassettes like and CDs too.
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
Like vinyl I get.
Yeah.
Vinyl makes sense. VHS was such like an inferior technology to DVDs and Blu-rays. It's
yeah.
like why?
Why would you even bother? Yeah, but it was funny. I like that. That was kind of But then after that scene where they, you know, like, oh, let's just not know. There's a whole montage of the old couple using technology and, like, typing on a computer. And then the other people typing on a typewriter. And,
yes.
Like all that yeah. stuff, which was awesome.
Yeah, that was funny. I think there's a great scene where, like, Ben Stiller is, like, Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts are hanging out with Ad Rock and his wife, played by Maria Dizia.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Ben Stiller pulls out his phone to look something up.
Yeah.
And then everybody pulls out their phone, and, like, it's, like, and Ad Rock's, like, why is it one person takes out their phone, everybody has to take out their phones?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I mean, it used to be considered rude, but now it's accepted. It's like women showing their ankles in the 1800s. Which I thought was a great line.
Yeah, there's
really
a lot funny. Of a good, there's a lot of good, like, just one-liners like
yeah,
that in this.
There's good stuff
perfect.
Like that. But yeah, So, I mean, do you want to talk about some of the more specific plot details and spoilers?
Sure, we can do that if you'd like.
Well, then let's do that.
All right.
Well, let's move on into spoilers for While We're Young.
Is this a good one?
Oh, this is the best. I read the review. It's the best ever on planet Earth. That's what the review said.
No, the guy who sees him said it was great.
We watched Breaking Bad last night.
Oh, my God. No spoilers. No. We haven't watched it yet. We T-voted it.
We just finished the first season.
That's the best television I've ever seen.
The way they do it. And gosh.
No, we haven't seen it.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. All right, guys. Let's move on into spoilers for While We're Young. So I think I wanted to talk about kind of what happens about halfway through the movie. Mm-hmm. Essentially, Adam Driver is like a young documentary filmmaker who wants to emulate Ben Stiller's work.
Right.
Or so we think.
Oh, with a twist.
Adam Driver is actually taking advantage of Ben Stiller.
Yes.
To help him film this documentary that he's filming. Mm-hmm. And the way he goes about it is severely dishonest.
He basically tricks
Ben Stiller into making this documentary for him. And so the climax of the movie is... It kind of becomes this internal debate about whether what Adam Driver did was ethical or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, Mike, why don't you decide right here, right now, whether you think it was ethical or not?
I don't know if it. They kind of make a point this point as well in the movie. I don't know if it makes much of a difference specifically in regards to the story they're trying to tell, with the documentary that they're making within this movie. But as Ben Stiller says, what about me? I think that was the messed up part, that how much he tricked Ben Stiller into believing he was part of it.
That's true. I mean, here's the thing. So what happens, I guess I didn't really explain it too much.
Yeah, let me just give you a vague answer.
Assuming
everyone had just seen the movie two hours ago like we did.
The documentary that Adam Driver is making, as he describes it to Ben Stiller, is that he's creating a Facebook account.
Mm-hmm.
Out of nowhere, because he is not on Facebook, because he's a hipster.
Yep.
And it's actually a great line at the end of the movie. it's like, are you a hipster? Well, I'm of a certain age, and I wear tight jeans. So.
Yeah, so I guess so.
But the movie that he's making is he makes a Facebook account with the idea that the first childhood friend that he hasn't seen since high school
reconnects
with him to talk to him, he, instead of talking to him on Facebook, he's going to go out and travel to go see him.
Right.
And to actually have a conversation with him face-to-face. And Ben Stiller kind of rejects that idea.
Yeah.
At first, he's like, well, that's not really much of an idea. You know,
it's
the start of one. Like, it's sort of an interesting concept, but, you don't really have anything after that. So it turns out Adam Driver was basically tricking him the entire time. The guy that he reconnects with, turns out he reached out to him, and it was this whole thing. He was actually a childhood friend of his wife's, Amanda Seyfried's, instead of his. And during his speech, during his interview, Adam Driver gives this history of his life that is actually the history of his wife's life.
Yep.
So it's a very dishonest way to go about making this documentary. And the documentary ends up not even really being about this character. It's more about his time in Afghanistan and the war. And they go to Afghanistan and, interview people that he was, working with. But so the general thing at the end of the movie is, he made this really great documentary
mm-hmm.
about the war in Afghanistan and, this guy's troop.
Yeah.
Does it really matter how he got to that point?
Right. As long as the story that he was telling gets told, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm of two minds about it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's that's the thing. I don't think he needed to lie about
to trick everything.
Why that is the case. It's weird. I guess it could be, an interesting hook.
Yeah.
To have, but every character seemed to think the meat of this documentary is the Afghanistan stuff. It's not
right. It's not about the personal thing.
Not really about the Facebook thing. That's kind of the most boring part of it.
Right.
So what's the point of even doing that?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it kind of reminds me of. Have you ever seen Catfish? The TV show.
I've seen the movie Catfish.
Okay. So I don't know if that was real or not. Do you know definitively? Has it ever been said?
I would assume it was fake.
Okay.
That's, that was, a big thing when it came out, I remember.
Yeah, it blew my mind when I first saw it, and then...
Really? I hated Kev.
Really? All right, well, fair enough.
I hated that movie. but I get what you're saying. That's
But then people were that was all set up, they agreed to do that and stuff.
Right. And now there's a Catfish TV show.
Yeah, so which makes me think...
That it might be fake.
Ploy.
But there are documentaries that have... been hoaxes or have been fake.
Right.
Exit Through the Gift Shop is one that has basically been proven fake, I think.
Really?
Like, it's...
I mean, I know it, like... I don't know, whatever.
I don't know. It seems... but that's a great movie.
Right.
That's the thing. Exit Through the Gift Shop is awesome. I love that movie. I don't really care if it's fake or not. Like, it's...
Isn't important to the story, I guess.
Exactly. So it's a
documentary is a medium. Like, it's, you know, you could use what medium you want to tell the story you need, you know.
Exactly.
So
I mean, it's a weird debate to have, specifically in the middle of this, like,
in a romantic comedy,
basically, which is why like the film geek part of Noah Baumbach is like just coming in. But,
and
Ben Stiller's documentary is supposedly terrible, which is, I think, is
he has a documentary.
In the movie, man. Come on. Yeah, apparently it's like 6.5 hours long.
Yeah, it's been taking 10 years.
Yeah, and it's apparently terrible. So I think it's an interesting dichotomy between him and Adam Driver. Like, they're supposed to be like kind of two sides of the same coin.
Right, and I feel like, you know, that's part of the growing old thing. Like, Ben Stiller feels slighted that he's worked 10 years, worked so hard, so much of his life towards making this documentary that's
exactly.
like an utter failure. And Adam Driver's just like... tricks him into making this movie for him, basically, and it's a huge success, and he's in Rolling Stone at the end of the movie and all this stuff. So, I don't know.
Yes, but that's basically a kind of our thoughts on the central conflict between those guys.
Yeah. I still blame the older generation for making everyone entitled. I'm going to stick by that.
Fair enough. I thought the final shot of this movie was perfect.
The final shot of this movie,
Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts just kind of look ahead of them. They're in an airport, and they see a baby playing with a smartphone.
A literal toddler.
Like, playing with a smartphone and, like, just kind of, like, putting it up against your ear and, like, talking.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it's baby speak. Like, it's not, like,
not talking
intelligible conversation. But I think that was really interesting. Like, I think that's actually, like, a perfect encapsulation of everything that the movie had built up to.
Right.
You know.
Oh, and she just bought a huge stack of magazines, which are, like... a dying medium as well, and and she's like, oh, you know, I'm gonna need these for the flight, and they look across and there's a baby in diapers on a phone, like on an iPhone.
Yeah, so it's a, you know, it's a weird examination of like aging people's relationship with technology versus young people's relationship with technology.
Right.
So I think it's interesting. I think it's While We're Young may not be Noah Baumbach's best film, but I think it's arguably his most complete work as like in terms of structure and in terms of like what he's trying to say.
Okay.
But yeah, I think I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, Mike. I liked it a lot.
All right.
I say people should watch it.
Cool.
If only for the ayahuasca scene.
The ayahuasca scene is pretty swell.
Which is awesome. Forgot about that.
That is pretty good. Yeah. There's a scene in this movie where Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts join Adam Driver and Mansi Fried on their journey into
their vision quest.
Which is pretty delightful.
Yeah, if you're interested in that at all, watch or listen to Kevin Pereira, former host of the Attack of the Show, has his own The Pointless podcast, and he did an episode co-hosted by Jeff Cannata, our longtime friend,
friend of the show, Jeff Cannata.
Yeah, where they discussed. Jeff basically was the host for the episode where he interviewed Kevin about him going to Peru for 2 weeks to go on an ayahuasca journey, basically.
Really?
Yeah, and it's actually really interesting, like some very personal, like touching moments and stuff. It's cool. There's a lot about that that's interesting.
Nice.
So to totally ruin whatever you were going to do.
Yeah, I think. I think we're about to wrap this up here. I think we're pretty much done, right?
Yeah, I'd agree.
Cool. So, Mike, where can we find more of your work on the internet this week?
You can find me on twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
And you can find me at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog. And you can find many of my podcasts at filmbook.com. It's a podcast about The Walking Dead and Arrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all these kind of different things. I'll also be covering a couple movies from the Tribeca Film Festival that you'll be able to read reviews of online. And that I'll probably talk about on this podcast at some point.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice lead-in.
It's fun.
Can't wait.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
I'm really excited for this movie.
Yeah. No, it's I just heard all that.
Yeah, good job, Mike.
Just heard like water splashing up.
The consummate professional. Sorry, well, I'll get some crackers for you to eat on mic, too. Perfect. So stay tuned for more Star Wars news.
Yeah.